Only a Game is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
Dan Patch. If you know that name, you're a step ahead of lots of folks, at least according to Charles Learson, the author of a new book titled Crazy Good, The True Story of Dan Patch, the Most Famous Horse in America. Most famous horse in America? You may be thinking Secretariat or Seabiscuit or Affirmed or, if you were very young, Big Brown. But Dan Patch? When we had the opportunity to talk about his book, I couldn't resist asking Charles Learson how many of the people whom he told about the project had ever heard of this allegedly legendary horse.
I tell people that I had kind of a reverse Dale Carnegie course experience when I was writing this book, which, you know, the Dale Carnegie course is a lot about getting people to like you and ingratiate yourself. But I say, I'm writing a book, and they'd say, what's it about? And I'd say, Dan Patch. And then they would feel very bad because they'd never heard of the horse. And I touched this point with often very intelligent people and I'd found something they didn't know about, and they felt bad for a few seconds, and then they sort of felt like displeased with me and angry with me. Mm. And they made some wild guesses as to who he was. Some people thought he was an old ball player. The name has a kind of a maybe turn of the 20th century sound to it. And some people thought he got him confused with Sam Patch, who was like a daredevil in the 19th century, who jumped off bridges. And then one person said to me, isn't that a name for the devil? And I think he had him confused with Old Scratch.
That was
I had
my
to look
favorite.
That up. Yeah. So people groped for something, but generally it made them feel bad that they had. And I try to assure them, and I try to assure the readers directly early on in the book, that it's okay if you don't know who this horse is.
You write at some length about the horse's birth. How close did Dan Patch come to never seeing a sunrise?
Very close, Bill. He was born with a crippled leg. His left hind leg was twisted, and not a disease or anything, just the way he developed in the womb or the way his leg was. And he couldn't stand up to nurse. And if you know about horses, which I learned doing this book, that first draft of mother's milk is very critical. It contains antibodies and whatnot to keep a horse alive. So he was helped up by human beings, but there's really no point of a horse going on like that if he can't even stand up. And so in the stable there in Oxford, Indiana, someone said after a few minutes to his owner, said, Dan, do you want me to get a hammer, meaning to put him out of his misery, to euthanize him? And there was a pause, and then the owner said, no, I don't think so. So he came that close. Mm.
In the spring of 1896, when Dan Patch first struggled to his feet, how big a deal was harness racing?
America was sports mad already at that point in history, but only three sports really mattered: horse racing, baseball, and boxing. Everything else was either coming on strong in some cases, but they were minor. And of the two horse racing sports, harness racing mattered by far the most for about a 30-year stretch. I'm like 15 years on either side of the turn of the 20th century. Harness racing was the number one sport in America. And there's actually a good reason for that, a real reason you could put your finger on, and that's because it was the thing that came before the car, the closest thing to an automobile, because these were buggy pulling horses,
right?
And they were created by Americans for that purpose, and it worked. America tried to create this breed of horse, and it worked, and people were very excited about that.
Though Dan Patch is the star of your story, Crazy Good is full of intriguing two-legged characters as well. Myron McHenry, perhaps foremost among them. Of Mr. McHenry, the man who drove Dan Patch, you write, apart from the money to be made, he found the idea of hoodwinking the public irresistible. Tell me more of Myron McHenry.
This was a mean, cranky man, beyond cranky. He was a superstar of his day, and he's kind of a parallel figure to Dan Patch. Everyone knew who Myron McHenry was. He was the best sulky driver, harness racing driver, of his day. And like Dan Patch, he's been completely forgotten. He was a hard liver, a drinker and a womanizer, and had probably other faults too. And he set up a few fixed races, as we describe in the book. But he was charismatic to the point he was known as the Wizard of the Homestretch. Everyone had a nickname, or some people had like seven nicknames in those days. But And he was also the man from Freeport, Illinois, and he was a figure of great fascination. But he had almost no horses in his stable at any one time because he was so mean, and because he also like hit on the wives of the owners of the horses, and he would eventually lose these horses. So his career is a story of great horses slipping through his fingers, and that's what happened actually with Dan Patch also.
You write that the grand circuit upon which Dan Patch performed was intriguingly impure, as all horse racing has always been. But is it fair to say that Dan Patch brought a kind of purity to the game?
Well, he did, Bill. He raced against other horses, of course, in the beginning of his career, and then he ran out of competition. He went on to race against the clock and put on these exhibitions, and that's when he really became famous and an attraction. That sounds counterintuitive, perhaps, because you think, well, it's a sterile exercise of just one horse going around the track against the stopwatch. But in fact, racing was so crooked in those days that people appreciated it. It was like a no-nonsense, hey, it's either he beats the clock or he doesn't, and no fooling around. And you could bet on that, you know, whether he would do that. But in those days, they had heat racing, like best three out of four or two out of three. And that allowed so many opportunities. You could still win the race, but you could lose an individual heat. So these guys really fooled around. And because if you lost a heat with a horse like Dan Patch, and this actually happened twice with Dan Patch, he was stiffed, you could then introduce a little bit of doubt as to whether the horse was really up to it and get higher odds in the subsequent heat while cashing a bet on another horse in the heat in which you hold Dan Patch back in, if you follow that. So there was a lot of fooling around in those days, and people both took it as part of the game but didn't like it at the same time.
Perhaps even more remarkable than his speed and his record on the track against other horses was Dan Patch's disposition. He was gentle, especially with children, and when the crowd cheered, he bowed in recognition. Or did you make that up?
I didn't. I mean, not only didn't I make it up, but his trainer never taught him to do that. The old cantankerous, cranky Myron McHenry had a swear. He says, that's the last thing he would do is bring a horse back and have him bow nicely before the crowd. He'd bring him back and spit at the crowd, maybe. Dan Patch wanted to do this. Whenever he saw a photographer, a guy aiming a camera at him, he stopped. He got the idea of the superstar thing, and he liked it. You know, he had this quality that it comes down to, I think, is trust. He trusted humans, and human beings appreciated him for that and loved him. He didn't fret worry unnecessarily like a lot of horses do, and it's understandable. They don't know what's going to happen next. People are causing a commotion around them. A big crowd gathers around their stall. But Dan Patch just took everything in stride, and as you mentioned, he was very gentle. Children used to run back and forth beneath his stomach. When he got back home in Minnesota in the off season, he would pull kids on his sleigh around town. Kind of a remarkable thing. You won't see Big Brown doing that in the bluegrass country.
Dan Patch inspired at least two musical compositions and also what you have called the worst poem ever written. I wonder if you would be so kind as to recite that poem.
Well, this is from the Horse Review, which was a magazine that came out weekly in those days. I'll see if I can do it justice. This was after one of his big wins, after he set the world record once again. "We hail thee, proud monarch of the turf, and yield to thee thy laurels fairly won. Dauntless is thy courage, matchless is thy worth. By thee all kings before thee are undone." It's pretty horrible.
Hey, if it's not the worst, it's among them, as they say.
But there are other poems about him in the Horse Review that kind of mixed black dialect with Irish dialect. It was just awful. So people couldn't control themselves when it came to Dan Patch.
Like the fictional horse Black Beauty, Dan Patch had a series of owners. Who was the best of them and who was the worst?
Well, the best of them in terms of, making Dan the horse he is today was probably also the worst in some ways, and that's his last owner, M.W. Savage of Minnesota, of Minneapolis. M.W. Savage also forgotten today, but he was a semi-big shot in his day, and he had a, this was the era of patent medicines, of all these cures for things that didn't really exist and whatnot, and he got the idea to do that for animals. So his basic business was selling fake cures, miracle cures to animals, and he bought Dan Patch, and his main product was this thing. It was called 3 Feeds for 1 Cent. It was a food supplement, and he said Dan Patch consumed this daily, and it was a natural tie-in with him. Of course, when they analyzed the stuff finally, they found out it was ashes, salt, pepper, and strychnine, which is rat poison. So I don't even think they were really giving it to Dan Patch. But Savage, to promote himself and his company, he had political ambitions. He's the one that put Dan Patch out there and before the public, and toured him around the country and kind of made him the horse that, to those of us who remember him today.
When you say Dan Patch was put out there, you don't exaggerate. He raced well beyond the point where there was any question of whether he could still run.
Yes, Bill. He these things worked so well for a while, these speed exhibitions. He drew 90,000 and 100,000 people, and once 115,000 people in Allentown, Pennsylvania, just to watch him race against the clock. Now, this is in an era when Major League Baseball, very popular, growing sport at that time, but a good crowd was 2,500 people. They used to get 7,000 people for the World Series game. And here's Dan Patch drawing 80, 90, 100,000, 115,000 to see him do this. Of course, the owner fell in love with this idea and was making a fortune, sometimes $20,000 a day with this. And Dan could do it a couple of times a week, those kind of things. So he was making so much money, they didn't want to stop. And he should have stopped, though. There's a very sad excerpt in the book of his last account in Los Angeles in 1909, and on Thanksgiving Day, it's a rainy, cold day in Los Angeles. And he's going so much slower than he ever went before, but he's just trying to do it for the public, and he goes through the motions, and then he just can't do it anymore after that.
Dan Patch died on July 11th, 1916. How did the world of harness racing and the world beyond harness racing respond?
Well, it's funny. He'd been so popular. He made $1 million a year endorsing products. This is at a time when Ty Cobb, the highest paid baseball player, was making $12,000 a year. And he'd drawn those people that I just spoke about. But by the time he died, and he lived to be 20, which is not an extraordinarily old age for a horse, but the world had changed. The automobile had arrived. And the horse that was so beloved, even as he was a practical everyday thing, became old-fashioned and quaint, or beyond quaint even, just old-fashioned. And people turned away from horses. And when Dan Patch finally died, his death didn't make big headlines, I found. And it's kind of poignant and sad. And he was on his way to being forgotten even while he was alive, because he represented a kind of technology which had been superseded by the automobile.
In your subtitle, you identify Dan Patch as the most famous horse in America, but I wonder how many of our listeners could name a single trotter or pacer today. What's happened to the sport Dan Patch dominated?
Well, one answer is the automobile. I mean, that's what really, when harness racing was the number one sport in the country, it was kind of like NASCAR, because people would go out and watch a horse's race. They were kind of the cutting edge of that kind of technology, if you will, just like the NASCAR cars are. And they would root for horses that maybe were genetically, related to the horses they had in their own stable at home. And so it was kind of like NASCAR. But when the car came along, it made, people would talk about whether a mile was in 157 or 156 and three quarters, but the car just put an end to all that. It made all that discussion moot. So the car was one thing that undid harness racing. Then some people maybe remember that harness racing had a big renaissance after World War II, when it became a nighttime game that fit very well with the new era of prosperity and lots of leisure time and the moves to the suburbs in New York at Roosevelt Raceway and in Chicago and certain other big cities. It became a nighttime thing to do, and they drew big crowds, and on the weekends they had to turn people away. They were filled to capacity. And this then what killed that eventually was a combination of things, the spread of casino gambling and whatnot. So harness racing has had a couple of high points, and now it's I don't know if you could say it's on its last legs, but it's almost back where it was in the days before just before Dan Patch, when it was just a country fair sport.
Charles Learson is the author of Crazy Good, The True Story of Dan Patch, the Most Famous Horse in America, published by Simon & Schuster. He joined me from the NPR studios in New York. Charles, thank you very much for speaking with me.
Thank you, Bill.
My conversation with Charles Learson will be featured on this week's program. We'll also be focusing on the Belmont Stakes, of course. Our expert, Jenny Reese, will try to maintain her perfect record as a handicapper for only a game, probably by joining the long line of people who believe that on Saturday, Big Brown will win the Triple Crown. But we'll see. We'll update the NBA Finals as well, and we'll have a story about Ira Neubel of the Lakers, who's been leading a campaign among his former players around the league to direct attention to the crisis in Darfur. We'll also visit a stickball tournament in the Bronx and learn about how that venerable game differs from venue to venue. So join us, and remember, you can always listen to the program at onlyagame.org.